Good evening, everyone. It is Wednesday night. It's 7 o'clock, and here we are once again. And at the moment, what we're doing is we're working our way through the Invocation of Presence, a unique volume written by E.J. Gold. And even though we've made it this Wednesday night at this 7 o'clock Pacific time, I have no idea whether we're going to make it to the next Wednesday at 7 o'clock. At this point, when I recall last Wednesday at 7 o'clock, it seems ages ago, Pat.
It wasn't.
It wasn't?
No.
It just seemed like an age of man ago that it occurred.
Yeah. It was not whatever you're saying that it was. It wasn't. Whatever you say it was, it wasn't that in terms of time and space.
I'll take your word for it because I already know. She can prove it, and that's what I like to hear.
Yeah.
And so all I know is that we are here right now.
That I agree with.
Okay. Is Sean Barone on, by the way? Good. So we have we're just on the prologue. We've made it to the prologue, okay?
We say that as if that was not a big deal. It's a big deal to get to the prologue.
We've made it to the prologue.
This is quite something, this whatever... We're calling this a book. This body of material is really intense, takes a lot of attention. It takes a calmness and detail. And also it takes a little bit of just sitting back and relaxing with it and not being urgent.
And we have the attention to do that. And tonight we'll exercise that attention in a very unique way. And the prologue, which is the prologue to this book, which, by the way, followed.
Excuse me.
Just read through what it followed, okay, Pat?
Well, sure. Don't forget I have a little.
Yeah, well, we're
going to
definitely
yet.
Get that.
Okay.
The prologue has followed a table of contents. It's followed an introduction called The Key to Life.
Yes.
It's followed a preface.
Yes.
Which is called Why Work on Ourselves at All.
Yes.
And then finally we come to something called a prologue.
That's right.
And before we begin the prologue, before whatever the heck a prologue is, which we're going to discuss in a moment.
Good.
But before we do that, we have an announcement, and Pat, you're up.
So this is the official medical report. I watched the... What do they call it in the mornings when it happens? It's the morning show. It's EJ in the morning show. What's it called? Morning show? The morning show had a piece of data for folks who were on the forum and could go and look at it called the medical report. And I thought, what a fabulous thing to do. I'm going to make a medical report. There's been a little bit of trepidation by some of my cancer doctors about how there's little things popping up on my skin. But the official report is, I saw the skin doctor, and it's just genetics. It's just in my DNA. It's the same stuff my parents have. The little things blip up on the skin when you get older. So, you know, we need to also confirm that the physical form sitting here is in good working order, like I say. Or at least, I'm asking for this time, another 24 years. That's where we're going.
And she has
that's
precedence for that, too, in her family.
I do.
A good thing. And we're really glad to hear that because
I'm sharing it.
It's taken some of us, in my case, are slower than others, but I'm starting to catch on to the fact that I've been blessed with existence.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, I've been blessed with the existence, and... Most of my life, I've been able to coast. I've been able to coast as a physical entity, but as I get older, I'm now 66 years old, I realize that I actually have to do something to keep it vibrant.
At least a little something.
Even in my case, it's more than a little something. I have to have a physical discipline of some sort, and I have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking about it isn't enough. And pretending that I'm eating the right foods, which I happen to eat the right foods, is part of it, but also things like breathing exercises and a little cardio, a little yoga type things or qigong, things we have to pay back for the gift of existence, because as we're going to see in the prologue and in the remarkable book that's about to follow, we are given the prize and the opportunity to utilize that which is put before us and has given us the ticket into existence. And Harry, I'd like you to comment on that just for a moment, if you would, please, if you're up to it, if you feel like it.
Comment on what specifically again?
Just the opportunity that we have, just that we have the opportunity of existence. That's the gift of existence to therefore then begin to do our work.
You know, I was just thinking about that very thing when you asked me this, because I was trying to remember the name of the saint who said that angels worship at the headstones of human graves, because it's something that we have a unique opportunity to do here that even angels cannot do. And if they wish to obtain the possible prize that is available to us, a reclamation of our heritage of who we really are, well, they have to go back through the whole grade school and start over from the beginning like the rest of us. That's why we, you know, like it says in Hebrews, you never know when you host an angel unawares, because of this gift that we have of incarnation.
Thank you.
So there it is.
I'm thinking you've exactly set the mood that I wanted to share with the experience last night in one of my choir spaces that I go to twice a week. I've noticed for me that if I'm willing to cooperate with the musical environment, it actually is like an assisting factor for me to become more present. And so I try and practice it. First, I have to remember to do it. That's always the hardest part. But
you have to remember to do what?
To activate my presence in the music chamber.
Thank you.
And so that occurred to me relatively early in the evening, last evening with our rehearsal. And what I noticed was the calmness level, where I didn't have the jarringness and the push of the regular musical event, which is, you know, I have to sing loud so that people can hear me and I make sure I have the right notes and blah, 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 all that sort of drama. When that settled, I actually heard not just myself better, but also the group better. And so I was more of a participant in the activity, because I wasn't active about the activity, if that makes sense. I was more passively involved in the activity, more receptive, and that actually increased my participation, if that makes any sense. That's what I wanted to share with the group.
So, a prologue.
Yes.
It's a literary device that writers will often use to give a number of things. Sometimes you have to give a backstory on like a character that's about to go, like in Romeo and Juliet. I can't remember. I think it was the sheriff. That's not the sheriff, but whatever his. One of the officials comes and he talks about the Capulets and then the families and what they are and how important. That sets the background for what's about the characters. That's a type of a prologue. And in other cases, authors use the prologue to kind of model what the book is about to be. What are we going to talk about here and put it in context? And this is a great prologue.
Mm.
It's short, but it's a really good prologue. It's if we read it in a certain way, you're going to see that it tells us quite a bit. Okay, and I want to thank Sean Barone for posting in the Facebook page of invocation of presence, and he made some very interesting comments that we're going to get to in a little while. And it's short enough that I think we'll read. Should we read through it, or should we just? Okay, good.
Yes.
So we're going to go ahead and read through it.
Yes.
And
we have four readers
you,
here.
Would you like to read a little bit? Are you okay with that? Okay.
So he'll hand you the phone.
We'll
start
we'll
off.
We'll start here.
And then you read, and then she'll get the phone from you. Good.
Okay. So read with listen and read for yourself with good attention. Okay? Activate that attention, this elusive thing that Power's telling us about. Okay, let's see if we can activate it, because we're in this space where we can utilize this, okay? Would you like me to begin, or do you want to begin? You're going to begin? Okay, go ahead.
The Invocation of Presence, Prologue. Here I am. G held court at the Tiptoe Inn, a fabulous bakery and delicatessen on the north side of Broadway near the Ansonia Hotel, where he had been staying in Mrs. C's apartment, and several new pupils decided to offer him a ride around Manhattan, north on FDR Drive, across Harlem, and down on the Hudson River Drive, back to his office.
And when we read, this is just an aside, you read and then you pass it on. You read, you may read one sentence, a paragraph, two paragraphs. You have to sense that yourself, okay? All right. So I'll continue. Thank you, Pat. It began calmly enough, but then G insisted that he drive the car, a large, expensive Bentley open coupe. His driving skills and daredevil driving were well known by all the members of the group. He wasn't exactly reckless, but one had the impression that he was trying to stay on a Brahma bull that had run amok. It was hard to remember in all this that he actually had control of the car. It seemed to us that the car had a mind of its own, which EJ was barely able to reason with, and which required his constant, dramatic overcorrection.
As we drove up the FDR Parkway, G began to speak. Here I am, in this wonderful machine. And my own organic machine, meanwhile, is receiving and categorizing impressions, in response to which my marvelous head brain, without which I would be completely and utterly ignorant and unable to orient myself, happens to think categorically in more or less random patterns of association, whether real or imagined, in response to the general patterns of impressions. And here I am, having a fascinating conversation with myself, an inner dialogue which, if it were only able to be recorded for posterity, would without doubt become the classic philosophical reasoning posture for all future generations to come on the subject of, but what was it I was just a moment ago thinking about?
It all seemed so lucid. I understood something about something which I had never understood before, and which, unless I am mistaken, has never yet been really formulated quite so clearly by anyone else. It's so difficult to try to remember what it was that seemed so clear a moment ago, while my organic machine is forced to bumble and fidget in more or less spasmodic reflex, responding automatically and semi-automatically to a combination of inner and outer events and influences, both real and imaginary, pat-patting along like this beautiful new automobile.
With more or less
the same mechanical smoothness.
Unless, of course, something unexpected happens.
Hang on. You have to please begin again.
Unless, of course, something unexpected happens to interfere with the smooth functioning of the machine, all the various parts of which are organized and directed by some device or other powered by what? By three tiny, low voltage, low amperage batteries of some sort or another. Centers, I think they're called, and...
Harry, go ahead.
But just where is this famous power centrum about which we hear so much just now, when I think I need it most?
It only seems to appear at the worst possible times, when I am forced by circumstances beyond my control to make efforts beyond my ordinary capacity, and my attention, for some reason or other, happens to be on the whole of myself, I suppose, with just enough attention left over for my outer world, which seems to proceed unaccountably quickly under the law of three.
Whereas my inner world, what there is of it, seems to proceed rather like a broken, wind-up toy along the lines of the law of seven, periodically falling into spasmodic inattention and disorientation.
I know it ought to be the other way around, but really, it is as if everything inside me were made of molten lead. Nothing seems to want to move as I want it to. This very afternoon, I must begin to make a serious effort, much more serious than the efforts I made yesterday, or was it the day before, to change all this before my machine becomes too crystallized.
At least, I have remembered to invoke my own presence into the present. Perhaps it just comes naturally to me. Sometimes I am amazed at my ability to fixate my attention on one idea, like self-invocation, and at the same time place part of the attention not really necessary for self-invocation on that steel mill over there, he said, pointing to the left at a large red brick building complex, and on those interesting cloud formation, and at the same time hold an inner dialogue about the possible conversation I will have at a business appointment later this afternoon, and that round sign and this car coming up fast on my left.
He obviously wants to pass. What's the matter? Aren't I going fast enough for him? It's idiots like him that give drivers a bad reputation, he continued, swinging suddenly into the left lane to catch up with the speeding car. Let's see now. He began again after we had passed the other car by darting quickly around, passing him on the right, as we had feared would happen. I should stop a moment and take stock of the situation.
Something is definitely wrong. Could it be my emotional state? No, my emotional state, at least for the moment, fairly calm and quiet. Perhaps my sensing centrum. No, nothing unusual there.
Then it must be my moving centrum on some sort of spree. No, it is not that. But what could it be if not any of these three? I know I've forgotten something, but I can't remember just what.
Yes. Now I remember. Not only is all this taking place around me, but I am also part of this picture. My impartial presence could transform this event if only I were able to invoke myself into the present. As it is, I am barely able to take note of what happened a fraction of a moment ago, long after the event.
But wait, what has happened? Here it is, the middle of the afternoon, and only a moment ago, it was morning, and I was driving along the Hudson River and remembering to invoke myself. Yes, that's right. I was congratulating myself on my uncanny ability to remember to self-invoke. And, well, I was rather busy. I had a lot of things to do. First, I went to the baker's, and then the bank, or was it the other way around? G concluded his hilarious monologue to our boisterous laughter, ironic though it may have been.
Classy stuff.
Classy stuff, classy guy. Now, several of us have been in a situation very similar to this Bentley weaving through various types of traffic. I haven't been in a situation where he's been driving like that, but I've been in a number of situations where suddenly I'm thrust into unbelievable impossibilities and somehow you come out of it. And it's just plain fun. So think of the people riding in the car that were part of the group that were taking these notes down.
Oh, yes.
And what it was like for them, and yet there's the content as well.
Yes.
So what are some of the things that come to mind when you, how are we doing over there? They come to mind when you have read this, you see this, you listen to this dialogue that has unfolded during this drive through the craziness of men.
Well, it's a monologue, except that the dialogue is with the inner selves.
Correct. So that's good.
So it's a monologue, except that like all monologues, there's supposedly someone listening. And in this case, there's some answering going
there's
on
There's some answering going on, too. This is a critical point. This is a gargantuan point.
If we could just start with the first sentence.
Go ahead.
I would love to speak about what I know for a fact is the pristine quality of a fantastic author's technique in describing a situation that allows you to put yourself right in that moment with what was happening, but also if you allow it to hear what's being said in a, in an augmented fashion. For instance, tiptoe in and the north side of Broadway and a ride around Manhattan and then back to his office. And if you don't do anything except just read that sentence and allow yourself to understand that the references later on to the symptoms and the descriptions that are being given of the activities that take place within those symptoms are all referenced in that first sentence. So it's just, you know, it's so precise and so eloquent. And if you have the context of, you know, what this discussion is about here, you're given it in the first sentence. And I love that. And as you know, I'm one of these people that considers that the last sentence is also directly related to the first sentence. And the last sentence reads, first, I went to the baker's and then the bank, or was it the other way around, G concluded his hilarious monologue to our boisterous laughter, ironic though it may have been. And if you hear that and then start out, G held court, you get this inclusion. You are part of this event. You are along on that ride.
And indeed, right now, we're really along for a much bigger ride, because now it's spread out all over this country, over this telephone and over these computer devices. And here we are activating presence as we read this, wondering why our rabbit minds are throwing out all kinds of self-talk. And yet, we have transformed this event once again, so there's another level of irony.
Right.
We've expanded it here by our efforts here tonight. Strange.
Yeah, and you know, I think he sets the tone where there's this strange ride going on. So the external is extremely active, right? It's fast, it's moving,
it's hectic, it's boisterous, it's a little dangerous.
There's a little edge of, so think if you were in the car, what would your mood be? Where would you be? What would it be like to be in that environment? That's something to note, and then he begins to speak. Mm-hmm. Okay? So he begins to speak, and some of the first things he says, here I am. Okay, so he notates that in this wonderful machine, and what does he say next?
And my own organic machine.
So he's immediately starting to say, there's the outside machine, here's this machine, what are we going to be dealing with here? What are we dealing with? Very important, he's starting to once again just dichotomy. Is going to keep coming up here, all right? We're going to see a lot of the dichotomy.
Okay, David.
Go ahead, Judy.
Another thing that I find really interesting about this, and if you know Manhattan, and I lived in Manhattan for a good part of my life, is this is a circle. This is going in a circle, because the north side of Broadway is on the west side, and then they're, in order to go north on FDR Drive, you have to come down around the bottom of Manhattan, go up on the east side of the East River on FDR Drive, and then go across Harlem West, and then back down to his office. So what's happening here is all this is going on, and he's winding up nowhere, winding up exactly where he began. So that's hysterical.
And one of the things that we've noticed about working with someone like EJ is that he creates the environment that is a necessity to bring out certain data.
Yeah, the conditions are made so that the functioning of the space supports the teaching that is delivered.
And allows it to be delivered. Like, could this have been delivered in a lecture hall?
Probably not.
People sitting across, let me tell you all this information now. it probably couldn't have been done. And so he created this environment, not only for the students, but for himself too, creating the necessity that his instinct said, now's the right time. Now's the right time. Something needs to come out, and here it is. Here I am having a fascinating conversation with myself,
mm-hmm.
as you said, an inner dialogue which, if it were only able to be recorded for posterity, listen to this now, would without doubt become the classical
philosophic
reasoning posture for all future generations to come on the subject of, and then he pauses, and of course, are you really listening, you know?
Yeah.
Are you really paying attention here?
Yeah.
But it all seems so lucid. And this is so, he's transitioning. Now, I understand something about never formulated quite so clearly by anybody else. Now, here, he's about to, in this volume, he's about to formulate certain subtleties of attention and the operations of attention that really are not addressed in the philosophic literature that's out there. He's saying, here is something we're about to look at that's rarely been discussed and formatted for us. And that's what I want us to understand. What we're about to start to learn is a very subtle thing about our presence and attention. And for me, I wanted to do this volume because of the concept of sensing. And our sensing mechanism has to and will become just as important as breathing. And breathing is so important to us. We must breathe to exist. Well, guess what? To exist in the way he's talking about, we must breathe, and the invocation of presence must be just as important. It must become so second nature to us. Unfortunately, it doesn't become a mechanical habit. And he talks about that for us in a few minutes here.
Also, Dave, you know,
One second, please. Go ahead.
I can't tell when you're done speaking.
Judy?
Marvette has the phone that you're also talking on, so if you can just wait a second, she's going to speak, and then we're going to have you speak, okay?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, I was going to add to your comment. In today, the synchronicity of the reading I did was the 13th chamber, and the solution that is given from the guide for the 13th chamber is
referring to the 13th chamber as depicted in the AD, Book of the Dead,
and the 30th edition. For one is to be able to diffuse one's presence into the whole entire chamber, and then I will be free.
Then I will be free.
And so that's based on a premise that you have the ability to get to the presence.
The ability to get to your presence.
And then be able to work with diffusion of it. And there's so much involved in those few words. So I thought, it's so good that this book is being approached right now.
Perfect. Thank you.
Very good. Nice.
Good stuff.
QDC.
Queen QD, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for that. That's an interesting idea, diffusion of presence. I like that a lot. Okay, another thing that I notice here is we're going back to the very beginning where Pat really says he tells us a lot right there in the first paragraph. Well, if you notice, which I'm sure you all have, that it's the pupils that offer him a ride. And everything is calm, and then he takes over. In other words, he has to deliver the shocks to us. Because otherwise, it's just going to be a la-di-da ride around Manhattan.
Right.
And I think that that's a very interesting point. So when he gets in, then everybody is like, okay, you know, you're paying attention because the guy is driving like a maniac.
Yeah, and it forces, and one thing about EJ that I think is just one of his geniuses is that virtually everything he does, he penetrates an unusual, like look at these little coin things that he's doing now,
mm-hmm.
the medallions. It's like he was doing the coin collections and he happened to see this guy change this and now it was this, and
mm-hmm.
now he's made it into an artifact that we can participate in if people would like to do that. So, yeah, you're right. So the, in a certain way, the students passively give him a ride, and he goes, okay, let's try this now. And let's take it to another level. And he does. And in a sense, he awards them for making that initial effort. Go ahead.
I think it's a demonstration of an awakened being seeing many different possibilities for any given moment.
Yeah.
Because not very often does one get into a car and then all of a sudden transform into being the driver from being a passenger. When you are the guest and it's a strange city and this person is driving a Bentley. And so it would be, well, I mean, if you think of, okay, a teacher can do that, but it's a little bit of a finesse to be able to do that.
A lot of finesse. It is a lot of finesse to be able to speak. First of all, the chapter, the prologue is titled, Here I Am, thereby implying wherever I am, I'm here, and when I'm here, I am. So all of this communication that's going on just in the preface really lets us know that it is including us.
Yeah.
It's including us, and the prologue speaking about not just what it is that he does with his driving and with his monologue, but that it is the descriptive opening, it's the intro to the course for self. This is where you enter into yourself, where you go forth inside yourself and start working that. It's the, like, your mother takes you to kindergarten on the first day, maybe for several days, to make sure that you're okay with getting to that door and going inside those steps. And that's what this reminds me of. This prologue basically says, here, I have done this. This is how I do. This is what you can do, too, like that. It's a demonstration also of those beginning steps and also some of the faltering.
And the faltering, more towards the bottom of this page, it says, it all seems so lucid. I understood something about something. Now, you have to know EJ. Anyway, which I had never understood before, and which, unless I am mistaken, has never yet been fully formulated. So he's kind of like throwing the glove down.
Yep.
Right? He's saying, yeah, this is out there. It's never really been formulated, but then he says, it's so difficult to remember what it was that seemed so clear a moment ago.
Yep.
Listen to that interplay, that fun that he's having with us in a sense. Well, my organic machine, and this is your point, Pat, mm-hmm. is forced to bumble and fidget. And so he's saying there's that thing, and that's what it does.
Yeah.
And it's, he's drawing, you know, once again, he's starting to create this dichotomy, right?
And clearly defining the sensing experience of it, what it does as it's doing its thing, and what your observation of that might be. Because he then references it as being, you know, this putting along like this beautiful new automobile with more or less the same mechanical smoothness. That's the preamble. That's the setup.
That's where we're at.
That's the setup there. Unless, and you know, the setup is really, it's important to, you know, take your bearings, know where you are, get oriented, blah, 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 whatever words you want to put there. But if you don't have the context for the equipment that you're working with, you know, you first have to know your machine. I mean, this is basic stuff.
And he introduces us to the three centers, which I'm sure during the course of this study we'll get into
probably
in some detail.
Yeah, it might come up once or twice.
And then he says, where is this famous power centrum?
Suddenly he introduces,
he goes, it only seems to appear at the worst possible times. When I am forced by circumstances beyond my control, like driving a car that I've never driven before in a super, you know, complex traffic pattern.
Yeah.
To make efforts beyond my ordinary capacity. How often do you put yourself in a position such that you are required to make efforts beyond your ordinary capacity?
Are you talking to me?
I'm just actually the only one I was thinking about when I was, in fact, I was in particular.
The plan is to have created the agreement with the universe that will be every day at every moment that I could possibly agree to. That is the method under which I have agreed to operate. So
David, could you and Pat dissect one line that I thought stood out?
Yes.
Where he talks about my impartial presence could transform this event if only I were able to invoke myself into the present. I mean, this is what this whole book is going to be about.
It's what this whole book is going to be about. But listen, I mean, listen to the profundity of that comment. It's like so bold to believe that
it's on page 3.
Our presence could transform everything.
Yeah.
That's a big order.
My impartial, this is on the last page 3 there. My impartial presence could transform this event if only I were able to invoke myself into the present. Now, let me just ask you in general, how does that first strike you? When you read that, you go, gosh, if I had can invoke my presence, I could change the event, right? So how does that first strike you?
Well, you would have master over the organic machine if you could invoke your presence. I mean, one of the things that's really interesting here is this idea of 3 tiny low-voltage amperage batteries. I mean, this is exactly the way Gurdjieff describes it, that each center has an accumulator, okay? Mm-hmm. Each center has an accumulator, but there is a large accumulator that feeds all the centers. So until you can tap into the central accumulator with your presence, with your eye, you're operating from these low voltage accumulators, which you keep depleting because of your mechanical life. And then they borrow from one another, like one center will borrow from another center.
But he's saying that if something occurs, then you can put yourself in a position where there's, with not, beyond your ordinary capacity.
Right.
If something comes up. And that's what I was asking Pat, is, you know, how do you put yourself in such a position that you in a sense, must operate beyond your ordinary capacity?
Well, the sentence speaks to me in the manner in which it is possible to approach this. If you think of if-then sentences, the if is always first and then is second. So I start the sentence where it says, if only I. So I've already established that it has to be an agreement that I can do, because it says if only I were able to invoke, ability is implied in the sentence.
Correct.
But it also says if only I were able to invoke myself into the present as if you were not present at the moment, which again puts me back at what I said before. You have to know where you are now. If you are not present now, how do you know that? What do you use to determine if you are present or not? That to me is where that starts.
And this is just aside
yes,
for
go
that.
Ahead.
This is the central part of the exercise for me in this book.
Yes, I
is
know.
That by the end of this study that we'll have a practical working knowledge of what it means to have our presence at our operating, and that we know we're in presence or not in presence.
Exactly.
That we know that situation. Huge effort.
So when the sentence says my impartial presence could transform this event, it's putting it in what's called the conditional.
Condition.
And the condition is I must be able to invoke myself into the present, which is an ability that is assumed in the sentence that's possible, but it has to be that. It must be that in order for the second part to follow, which is, of course, the first part of the sentence, my impartial presence could transform this event. So the two things
together, yeah,
actually yeah. include the ability, the capacity, and the doingness, and that in itself, think about that, already transforms the event, because the event is what is experience.
Ah.
Right, and the experience of taking the place of being part of the picture, the preceding sentence.
That's exactly
right. I
think
it's really, really important here. Where
so he opens up, he opens up the door and he says, oh, I'm part of this experience. I am part of this experience. So, but back to the comment, what does it mean to transform this event?
Yes.
What comes to your mind, just naturally? What's the first thing that comes to your mind?
A rising tide lifts all boats.
Okay.
That is, you're not just raising yourself, doing something of value to yourself, but impartial awareness, impartial presence has a universal effect upon all beings everywhere.
The one thing that comes to my mind when it says this change this event, it's like, well, I can change the way the world is around me. I can change the long line at the bakery to a short line, or I can move the traffic away, or I can win this event. Isn't that what he means?
I don't think so.
He doesn't think so. But that's what I want it to be, Harry.
I don't think so either.
Oh, I have two people voting against me already.
Well, see, that's how we know we're not present when we have these flights of imagination. So, full of daydreams. Daydreams are wonderful, but they unfortunately disconnect us.
And I think that the key is what Pat was implying and what Judy said, is that I am part of this. It's my presence in the event. The event is going to occur.
Yeah.
Things are occurring around me. But if my presence is active, then because I define the event according to my mechanicality most of the time, and I judge it, good, bad, I don't like this, I do like this. I judge that according to my mechanicality rather than just an objective appreciation of the unfolding around me.
Right.
And if
the event would just be an event.
It's just an event. And if I can be in the present, several things happen at that time. First of all, we have to have our mentation active. And Sean Barone, when in his posting, and you commented on it, Judy, he said, the mind impressed with itself. You know, the mind needs to be active, aware, because we have to catalog what's going, but that's not the guide. That isn't the guide. It is just a servant to the guide of our internal presence.
I think about it as the secretary.
It's a good, great, perfect.
You know,
it's
we're
the recording secretary.
Exactly. We take notes.
Take notes. And it does a great job of doing that. But then it gets confused and it says, oh, I should be leading this party. No. But when we are invoking your presence, you literally do change the event, but you don't change the external.
Nope.
You change your perception to it. And when you literally are invoking your presence in a certain way, you literally see something different in front of you. It could be the same set of events, but you see it, and suddenly your eyes are open and you go, my goodness. And then you might know, and this takes a while, that you have to, there may be something for you to do at that time. And I think that this whole prologue is EJ giving us finally this dichotomy between the machine operating like it's supposed to and our necessity for us to invoke our presence. And those two operating together become something that in another one of his books he calls the human biological machine as a transformational apparatus. And it's in that invocation that they start to work together. And I think that's what we're going to find as we go through this volume, that has to be around all the time, even in these crazy moments of driving in the middle of Manhattan traffic, which I've never done. I've never driven. I've ridden in many cabs there. But that's scary enough. But driving myself, I haven't done it yet.
You've been to L.A. That should be as
many, 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 many times. Yeah.
Yeah, Lincoln Tunnel's a little worse, I think.
Yeah. And so this is, he's just ringing the bell. He's ringing the bell over and over in this event here. He's saying, invoke the presence, invoke the presence. And of course, there's all this humor of, I keep forgetting. What was it I was thinking about again? Well, if he can invoke your presence, when you invoke your presence, you are standing in a form of eternality. And when you're standing in eternality, at that moment, it is clear and distinct. But in the machine itself, it's truncated. Life is truncated because the machine's job is just to categorize, is that thing going to eat me or not going to eat me? And on we go. So, boy, I mean, this prologue to me, it's like offering up a big, wonderful golden chalice that we can look for in the next chapters ahead of us.
Mm-hmm.
Now, before we take comments, which I'm sure there are some over there for us, I just want to say that the middle page, so we've looked very clearly at the first page and the last page, but the middle page has this ongoing discussion, references to things which may or may not be part of our, at the tip of our tongue, vocabulary. Power syndrome, of course, is one, but law of three and law of seven and becoming crystallized and et cetera. So this description here, which is quite detailed, if you just take it one word at a time, the description in the middle of this prologue references every single piece of the following contents of the book, every single piece that's going to be discussed. And it would be, you know, if we were in the classroom and there was the blackboard behind me, I would say, okay, homework for this week would be take this, it's nine paragraphs, I believe, on the second page, and write for yourself what it is that strikes you, either that you know about it or that you don't know about it, and hold that up as your first set of notes for the class.
That's right.
And keep referencing these things like we did in the, when we were studying the American Book of the Dead, we had this constant referral to, you know, the voyage, the journey of the Voyager and various pieces about the guide and reference to various things. Well, this is a different type of study material.
Yeah.
But it has the same kind of, we've got the preamble here, we've got the prologue, and we've got exactly what's going to be covered. So make yourself some notes about those things that you want to track and keep it in front of you while we go along.
And I deliberately didn't focus on those.
I know.
Because we'll have a broader discussion and we'll need help from Harry and Judy to help us through that material in a way that we can understand.
Yes.
I know that they're very technical terms. We're not able to quite go there
yet.
We're
not there yet.
But we would like some, we will need some guidance. And we are going through practical work on self. As we would go through each chapter, we'd develop new tools. And we'd have this tool. And I just felt like we were developing a tool belt that we carry through our lives. So we're being introduced now to... The machine is great and wonderful. It's a wonderful machine.
Yes.
It's a wonderful machine.
Beautiful machine.
That we have here. And then there's this
other... It's a Bentley.
It's a
Bentley.
Bentley. It's
right.
A first level Bentley.
It's a classy machine.
Oh. I think I'll get up and dance.
There you go. And then we
very,
have...
Very good, Judy.
Well, Laura 34 a while back said attention. I think that was answering your question earlier. Sean Sun says secretary, yes. Grocky says, I did it, driving in mid-Manhattan at night in a big station wagon on acid.
Oh my God, and you're here. Wonderful.
And he lived to tell about it.
And Jennifer Gott says, I drove you, and that was scary enough.
I was in the car with you. It was scary enough.
Oh. Nice references. Thank you. Very cool.
So... It's a ton of fun, and it's a ton of fun to discover these things together. And let's see if we can approach this idea in the next few weeks, like, what does it mean? Do I have a handle on, I have invoked my presence now. It is working. It's a tool for me, okay? So that there's the beginnings of confidence in that. And so we're going to start on we're going to make the chapter one. Pat.
Yes, yes, and I'm so looking forward to chapter one. I mean, I really like the intro, the front matter, but I'm also very fond of chapter one. It brings back a lot of memories. to be going through this material again.
Yeah, Dave,
I want to bring up something you said last week that I think is really good to hold in mind, and that's this finding this still place of eternity in ourselves. And it's a beautiful idea and a very centering idea.
The in certain spaces that I've been in with EJ in a particular type of circle, he has stopped the space and he's gone. He'll say something like, "Stop."
Mm-hmm.
You were there.
Oh yes.
You were there. I was thinking, you weren't, but you were there.
Yep.
And like suddenly, the room is still. Just a moment. Stillness and silence and found that space. And we'll look at it again next week.
Good night.
At 7 o'clock.
Thank you, everyone. Bye.
Take care. Good night. Good night.